Oh, sorrow will have an end. Though my burden may be heavy and almost crush me down, someday I will sit with my Jesus and wear starry crown. Will the trouble soon be over? Sorrow will have an end. Oh, the trouble soon be over. Oh, sorrow will have an end. Well, he proved a friend to David. I heed him and I pray.
I was in pain, I got me a ticket, boarded the train, and a whistle, a scream, off to somewhere, and I didn't care. Lit a cigarette, looked out a yellow window, an old lady dressed in black sat down beside me, stared straight ahead, counting up all her many dead. Ah. Oh, Mr. Conductor, tell me, where are we going? Mr. Conductor, tell me, where are we headed? Mr. Conductor, he just walked on by. Mr. Conductor, he just walked on by. Now.
Out to dinner, buys her new clothes. That's the way that the world goes. This is music from Easter Island. Now, Easter Island, I guess, is the place where, when the world ended, it began ending there. They ran out of everything. At least that's the way we interpret what happened there. So they know about the world ending.
Grave, raised him from the dead. Long as I'm in this world, I am the light of this world. Long as I'm in this world, I am the light of this world. Prayer is the key to heaven. Faith unlocks a door. God, give me a key and I carry it where I go. Long as I'm in this world.
True, Easter Island, according to the some of the stuff I've read about it, they ran out of trees. They put up these big stone faces for I don't know what reason, but they ran out of stuff, and that was maybe a canary in the mine for us. So this might be, actually, maybe the Mayans are correct. This is Radio Unnameable. They didn't say anything about Radio Unnameable, but then who does? Bill Propp is here this morning. My name's Bob Fass, and we shall be here until 3 o'clock when Ahmed Ali will be here, I believe, to be in the moment. And I thought, you know, if I'm going to face the end of the world, consciousness or whatever, I would rather be in the company of someone like Paul Krasner than almost anyone on the face of the earth. So I arranged for a call with Paul Krasner on our or very funky telephone lines, because, as you know, Sandy left WBAI covered with grit. Our telephone lines are in the basement of this building, which the building itself is proud to say that it is back online, but it isn't really. The lights are on, and the sewage has been cleaned out of the elevator, but the building is still a little funky. It has this kind of beyond mold smell, you know, this kind of East River gone bad smell that you're familiar with if you have lived around a swamp or a bayou. And it might be happening again, you know. It's one of those awful, miserable, rainy nights. Kind of the kind of night when you might think that the world was ending. Of course, if it doesn't end, we're going to have some party. I mean, we are going to have a party to celebrate the fact that the Mayans were wrong. But there have been these signs, you know, all kinds of signs of terrible things happening. Open season on children around the world. 20 in Connecticut. 10 in Afghanistan. Individual instances of people being murdered in movie theaters. People being murdered in high schools. People being murdered in shopping malls. And it's not the guns that are doing it. It's the gun manufacturers, the people who make them. Now, they talk about being certified to buy one, to buy a gun. I mean, that seems a little absurd. Why don't we just cut down on the number of guns. Just cut them down. Is Paul on the phone now? We're going to call him. Well, I have more music for the end of the world, if that's okay.
Quite simply. So I think those worries would be unfounded, because Sanchez wasn't playing well, and yet he was not getting benched. And he was not, even during the middle of games.
Well, if you're benched, that's not the end of the world.
Kapari mai to do do hare kiri e aui te po e manue. Pari mai to 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 hari kiri e au I te po e manue.
Hey, it is. Hi, you're on the radio.
Manue.
Paul, are you there?
I'm here. Hello, hello, hello.
Good morning, Paul. Good morning. It's
Same to you. It is. You're 3 hours ahead of me.
So
it's still evening here. It's not morning yet.
Uh-huh. So when the end of the world strikes, it's going to strike New York, and then you'll be left on the air alone?
I can handle it. It's a challenge.
I'm sure you can. Paul Krasner was my very first guest over 50 years ago. And if this is the end of the world, I think there's no one I'd prefer to be on the air with at this moment. Hi, Paul.
What year was that?
I don't know.
That I was on the first time. It was early 60s, I remember.
It sounds... Well, then you couldn't have been there, as they say.
What do you mean?
If you remember the early 60s, it's hint that you weren't there.
Oh, I just didn't remember them saying that. I've heard a lot of people, different people, get credit for that. Robin Williams being one of many that have been reported that they coined that phrase. But it would have been either 63 or 64. No, it was more likely 63, I think. When did you go on? You would know that.
No, I wouldn't. I wasn't aware of, you know... I didn't get my first Julius Lester calendar till 2010, so I didn't keep track of days.
Is he putting out calendars?
Yes, Julius Lester has a wonderful calendar. If you can find him, Google him, you know, write to him and ask for a copy of it, you'll know not only the birthdays of all of the important political people and spiritual people, but you'll know when Eat a Pizza with Everything Day is, and other important moments.
You know, it's this is the last year that I'm using the calendar produced by the War Resisters League. It's because it's the last one they're producing. They've always done very beautiful, uplifting calendars. And it would have all of the days when, peace marches, took place, or Gandhi's birthday, or
right.
Things like that. So, it's interesting to see how each mindset has its own calendar and its own little maxims and dates of things that nobody else would know. Like, I'm sure the Pickle Factory News would have pickle parades listed on their calendar, to take an example at random.
Not precisely at random, but I know what you mean.
So anyway, so what year would it have been then?
I think it's immaterial. 63, 62, 61, 64. It's all kind of an inchoate mess, all of those 60s years. Actually, I've heard people say the 60s didn't begin till 1966. And other people said, well, no, the 60s began 1953. So, actually, the 50s didn't end until 1964. I mean, these are all... It's decadism, you know? It's decadent.
Well, in fact, a news bulletin has just been handed to me by my production assistant, Nancy.
Hi, it's Nancy.
She says, some people called from Australia to say they're still alive. It's tomorrow there. Well, it's tomorrow here now, actually. But they called 3 hours ago, before you. So, I guess, who knows? Maybe they started in New York and it's just going around to Australia.
Well, I had this thought that maybe the world isn't going to end.
I know
a lot of people will be disappointed, but we can say to them, it's not the end of the world.
Well, I'll tell you, I've been thinking about it a lot premise of mine I've learned, not having a job, you can think about this stuff and
there must be millions of people who are able to think about it.
About what?
Because they don't have jobs.
Oh, yeah, that's true. But sometimes they... You know, if you're in a financial situation like that, it supersedes any philosophical dabbling. But anyway, my point is that everything is perceived through their reality, which is through the prism of their upbringing, their whole psychological makeup, their agenda, their belief system, so that, you know, people from various religions will have a different interpretation of this end of the world thing. People who are partiers will have a party because it's the end of the world. People who are virgins will lose their virginity because the world's going to end and they don't want to miss having sex for the first time. And everybody sees it through their own perception. And so I was thinking, well, my perception is two things. One is evolution. You know, I think just like the 60s that you were mentioning before, it was, there was like...
You brought it up.
Huh?
You brought it up.
I left it to the wolves to be brought up.
Well, let me cut to something like The Chase, if I can, Paul. One of my half-brained theories about what it was that brought forth all of that creative energy in what you call the 60s was that because the bomb was hanging over us, we thought, well, we could end our lives at any moment. Because of that, what the hell, right? Let's go out and, as Jerry Rubin would have said, do it. Right? So there was something to the, like, this end of the world thing. It made, like, every moment precious.
But it was more than that. It was more, you know, that was one aspect of it, but it was...
The sexual revolution had something to do with that.
It was an evolutionary jump in consciousness around the globe.
Don't forget about the catalyst, LSD.
Well, it's hard to say which came first, the catalyst or
the Kaibal Barons.
Or the consciousness expansion. You know, because you had to go... It wasn't taking the acid so much as... deciding to take it,
true. That's right. Now there was a piece in the New Yorker this week I recommend to you by Rafi Kajadorian, who writes about a guy, a you know, a kind of a not very successful doctor who decided that he had better go into the army so he could get three hots in a cot. And when he was in the army, somehow he impressed a lot of people, and he got to be head of, I think it's the Edgewater facility, where they practiced chemical warfare. And he talks about how he released clouds of LSD on unsuspecting troops and something called BZ, which was really disorienting and has left some people with Parkinson's disease, some of the experimental subjects. The judges have said that people who were injured in these experiments weren't entitled to compensation from the army because, you know, you're a soldier and you take your risks. It's quite an interesting article. You know, we all know that LSD was out there in the form of, you know, little gifts from Dr. Owsley and Dr. Leary, but the Army was putting out its own experimental crowd control techniques.
Well, the CIA used it in... see if it would work in terms of mind control, in terms of truth serum that they experimented with it.
Well,
Ken Kesey was one of the people who went through that. And
he was one of the civilians who went through it, but there were
a
lot of people who were drafted. I tell you, this is my particular involvement in this. I was in the Army. I was in the psychological... warfare department in Fort Bragg, North Carolina.
Speaking of of psychological warfare. This is WBAI in New York.
And I hated it. I really hated it. I used to go to a desk all day and file papers, and I just wanted to get out of there and go to someplace that was even marginally nearer to New York City. And I went to the personnel office every day, and I looked on the bulletin board for possible stations that you could get yourself transferred to. And then one day I saw an announcement that the Army Chemical Warfare Center in Maryland was looking for volunteers for testing of some drugs, some chemical warfare agents, they call them. And, you know, I had been through tear gas training. They put you in some sort of a bunker, and they give you a gas mask, and then they make you take your gas mask off, and you run tearfully out, and, you know, and 20 minutes or 30 minutes later, you're back to normal. So I thought, this can't be too bad. And I went to the personnel officer, and I said, hey, I'd like to apply for one of those transfers to Maryland, to the Army Chemical Warfare Center. And he said, what are you, crazy, Fass? Are you nuts? You know what they'll do? They'll scramble your brain worse than it is now. And so he discouraged me from going there. But I came within, I mean, if somebody else had been in that office who wasn't such a human being, I might have gone there. And
well, you know, I was a purist. You know, I never took any drugs at all. Not aspirins, not tranquilizers, not speed. I mean, I didn't smoke cigarettes. I didn't drink alcohol. I was real a purist. You know, and so I had a big resistance. If I didn't take any legal drugs, I was even afraid to take illegal drugs. Especially when there was all of this.
I remember the day that you called all your friends and you told them, if you have any beautiful pictures or things like that, or music that you think is really going to help me, send it down to my loft because I'm going to be taking some aspirin.
Oh.
I remember.
Oh. Well, it was a party where everybody was taking aspirin. So the thing is that I published an article in The Realist by Robert Anton Wilson, who visited Leary in Millbrook. And when I published the article, I got a call from Leary inviting me to come to Millbrook. And I met him, and I met Richard Alpert, who later became Baba Ram Dass. And I just remember that now, this was a time when the propaganda was that it would destroy your brain.
And your chromosomes, I remember that.
That came later on, I think. You know, they had a different, it was like a sitcom series. They had different episodes. And at that time, it was brain damage. And so, and that scared me. You know, Ed Sanders said that it made him regret that he had taken any, because, you know, we fell for the propaganda. Just because we know the media lie, it doesn't mean that we don't take a part in taking everything as credible. And so but hanging around with Tim Leary and Alpert, it was their minds were so sharp and spontaneous and curious, and I thought, well, I'm risking to have brain damage if that's the result. So and so I changed my mind, and it brought me into a whole new world, it was like a an unspoken unspoken sharing of altering consciousness or listening to music. You know, you could pass around a joint in a circle, and it changed the rhythm and the focus. You know, and so at the, you know, it was summed up with sex, drugs, and rock and roll, but it was also a spiritual revolution. And so it was responding to much more than just the atomic bomb. It was all the injustice, all the discrimination that the mainstream society seemed to be take for granted. LSD served as a vehicle to break through that, to break through that the Eisenhower-Nixon years, which were so banal and so repressive, and so what the counterculture represented was an explosion out of that cloud, and so, you know, everything evolves, and I think that what's happening now is what happened then, an evolutionary jump in consciousness, and that's where change starts. But, you know, the devil never sleeps, or the dinosaurs wanted to survive too, and that's what's happening now, and I think that all of the things that we had ideals of in the 60s, I think that it's taken, you know, we were fighting for civil rights then. Now we have a
and against the war.
Huh?
And against the war, that terrible war in Vietnam was driving us crazy.
Yeah, that was another reason. And for busting people for smoking marijuana, that still happens. But now you can see it's at a change. There are so many different things at a change that, you know, the injustice of putting people behind bars for smoking a weed, insane. And one thing after another that. We thought was insane then, the discrimination against African Americans, and now we have an African American president. So a lot of, you know, there were no books in cookbook sections of bookstores of any vegetarian books. Now they have whole sections of it. They have vegan restaurants opening here and there.
And so, vegan and vegan recipes for marijuana cookies.
What do you mean?
Well, you make you can. It's possible to make it with pure vegetable oil rather than
butter.
With butter, which comes from some poor cow that got squeezed, some calf that got. It's cream taken away.
That's a good point. You know, yeah, it's a purist approach, but it's true.
But I have another memory of you in those early days when we were just beginning to experiment with pot. You confided in me. You said, "I always say I never get high." And what that does is make people try to get me high. So they bring out the very best. They say, you can't get high. Well, try this. And you get offered the very best that there is around. At least that's what you told me.
I think I was joking. I mean...
I never thought you were joking.
But I really didn't. I really... It was true. And except that I wasn't playing a game of hoping they would get their secret stash out. But I really didn't get high until 1965. I was the MC at a Vietnam Day rally. It was the first teach-in. And there were like 30,000 people there. During the day, it was outside. Jerry Rubin was one of the organizers, and he called me to, he was in Berkeley, I was in New York, and he called me to MC it, and he asked me if I could get him in touch with Norman Mailer, who became one of the speakers, and I recommended Phil Oakes to him, and he had never heard of him, but I said he's like a troubadour, he's in the tradition of combination of Woody Guthrie and Tom Lehrer. And so he served, Phil Oakes did, as, you know, between the speeches, you know, with an appropriate song. It was a very exciting time. And so why did I bring this up? There was a reason, I'm sure.
Well, it could be that your recent
memories.
Oh, I know.
Stu Albert, who was also an organizer of the Vietnam Day demonstrations, gave me a joint of Thai stick, and it worked. And I remember saying, "Now I know why we're in Southeast Asia, to protect the crops." So you're right, it was the war.
It was partly the war. And also the sexual revolution had a great deal to do with...
They were all intertwined.
Yeah, they overlapped, as you say.
The advent of communes.
But see, here's my bottom line for this morning. If we've come close to the brink of extinction yet one more time, how can we build on that? What can we do to, I don't know, make children safer or make greed more shameful? What can we do to change things? What can we do to get rid of all of the guns and the violence that seems to be America's trademark? What can we do to have a good time in this vale of tears?
What I sense happening is little explosions all over, all coming out of the same urge in our DNA for freedom. And that, you know, so here's an explosion of same-sex marriage, which people would never have conceived would be possible. Over there is two states, legalizing marijuana, challenging
for recreation,
mm-hmm. Huh?
For recreation, and not, merely for medical purposes.
That's a false distinction.
You're right.
Although they make that distinction because they act out of fear. Over there is the fact that, I don't know in how many years, but Latino and African American and Asian and other ethnicities will outnumber the Caucasians, and that's going to talk about your game changing. And so, and you can see it already in process, gradual. But that's why I started out by seeing evolution. You know, I don't think the apes ever thought about that they were going to eventually evolve into people, and there's a story that I tell, which is true, about when I was in December of 1967, Abby Hoffman and his wife Anita and I went to like a little work vacation, our first, on the Florida Keys. And we were there. We had taken acid, and we were going to see a movie. It was Abby's favorite movie. Burt Lancaster and Kirk Douglas, I think, or maybe. Anyway, it was a movie called The Revolutionists. And except there was going to be a hurricane, and it was beginning, you know, and we would have had gone further out. So we went to a different film. We saw The Ten Commandments and by the Dino De Laurentiis version, or was it the Bible, whichever it was. On the way back, as the acid was started to hit us, I remember saying that when Abraham is told by God to slice his son up, and he was ready to do it, and I said to Abby, that was I considered that to be blind obedience, and Abby said, and he perceived it as revolutionary trust. So anyway, we got back that night, and went once again. I knew I was going somewhere with this. It's raining now.
You were in the Bahamas, and there was a
Key West.
Key West, rather, and
yeah,
there was
I know
some
I know.
Sea
okay.
creatures so, that communicated with
right.
you.
Yes,
but before. Before we went to the movie, we went to the Seaquarium. And
now, how did I know that? How did I know that?
You're a mind reader?
No, I remember listening to this story with great interest.
I've told it before, but it's relevant to to what we were talking about, which is that. I was looking at a dolphin through the window, and I started, sort of hopping in one direction, and the dolphin went that way. You know, then I little trotted in the other direction, and it made a U-turn and did the same thing. Then I went a little bit fake, and then went back, and the dolphin did that same little dance. And it was the most interesting nonverbal communication that I had experienced.
I just had this image of Harpo Marx, you as Harpo Marx, doing the mirror yeah. game with a dolphin.
It was very much like that, yeah. And so I said to the dolphin, why are you smirking like that? And the dolphin said, if God is evolution, then how do you know he's finished? And I'm willing to admit that might have been an acid hallucination out of my own mind, but that applies, you know, that have we stopped evolving? You know, we're always going to be like this. Everybody, again, when I said to Abby, who was smoking cigarettes at the time, that he was gonna, it wasn't good for his lungs, and he said, "Oh, it's okay. We're all gonna grow gills." So, I guess when the floods came, for 40 days and 40 nights. So anyway.
So are we?
Wouldn't it be funny if the world really were going to end? You know, but at least it gets people thinking about.
That's what I'm saying, that this nearness to the apocalypse, to the precipice, is going to give us maybe a little creative adrenaline.
Oh, yeah, more adrenaline than the fiscal cliff.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. Well, there's another call. Paul, do you mind if I answer that other call?
Please.
All right. you could be on the air now. Hi. Oh, well, that's...
Oh, well.
Oh, well.
Oh, there it is again.
Give it another try. You're on the radio. That sounds ominous, doesn't it? Don't we have such terrible problems with our phones now, Paul? Things have never been worse technically than they are now at WBAI. You must remember WBAI before you and I met. You first, I heard, think I had seen The Realist, and then I heard you as a guest on Les Davis's program on WBAI when I was, you know, just a listener. Do you remember that?
Oh, sure, sure. I was doing, he had a jazz show.
Right.
And
Saturday afternoons.
Yeah, and he had invited me to do little commentaries. And I remember one of the commentaries I did, the last one, was about abortion rights. And it didn't fit in with the image of their station to talk about controversial subjects like that. So,
well, not in the context. No. Not in the context of a jazz show. That's the kind of distinction that was made then. We could have a discussion about the right to have an abortion. We could even do a documentary about women who'd had abortions. But in the context of a jazz show, it was thought to be, you know, out of bounds. Strange, these distinctions, but they seemed pretty important back then.
Well, I can see that. I felt that there was a relation between them. You know, the that abortion was to controversy like jazz was to pop music. I'm not sure, but there was some connection about, you know, what they would now say is thinking outside the box. That's what I thought that the commentaries had in common. You know, that's why Lenny Bruce, when he was performing, he loved to perform when a jazz band was behind him, because they were the ones who got what he was saying and he got what they were playing.
Right, and Lord Buckley before him.
The what?
And Lord Buckley before him.
They were all part of a tradition.
Jazz idiom.
So, I mean, I even think Radio Unable is part of a tradition, you know, what the Native Americans would share their stories with each other. And this is just on a larger electronic edition.
Well, that's heavy praise, Paul. I'm pleased to hear you say that.
Well, you know, it's none of us sprung out of a vacuum.
Well, that's right.
You know, when I published The Realist, that was part of a tradition going back to The Independent, I.F. Stone, all the way back to The Iconoclast, which was in the 1890s in Waco, Texas, all the way back to Thomas Paine in the
And Mark Twain.
Absolutely.
And earlier than that, Johnson. Who?
Johnson? Which Johnson?
The Johnson that wrote the original dictionary. Blanking on his first name.
Ben
Johnson was a playwright, but Johnson was a, a thinker and a writer. And his everyday conversations were recorded by a guy named Pepys, P-E-P-Y-S, in London.
Oh, yeah, I remember knowing of that, aware of it.
It's one of those things I used to know, too, but now it's all slipping away.
Well, you know, but that's the thing about the end of the world, you know. the concept of it ending is just a good little reminder of how precious and fragile life is, and sometimes I feel sorry for people who forget that and get so involved with petty things that they get angry about, or you know, it's I think that's encouraged because it makes for better consumers.
Maybe.
But go ahead.
Maybe that's what they're saying again. If you want to help the economy, go out and buy, buy, buy.
Well, you know, the thing, you know, there's this huge blizzard going on along the East Coast.
Well, it should be coming here soon, I hope.
Yeah, but here's the thing about it. And so who knows, what's that going to do to the airplane schedules? You know, people are going to go for this big once-a-year anticipated Christmas reunions of family and giving gifts and having fun and looking how the babies are growing, and planes get canceled because of the weather, all because it's the celebration of the birthday of a kid whose mother was a virgin, but really because she was impregnated by a dove, which was God in disguise. So it's done every winter, you know. Instead of when they wanted to have it in spring, but that's why I'm listening. The conservative right-wing pundits are right. There is a war on Christmas, and I want to lead it. Change it into June 3rd. I'm going to start a petition, and I want your help.
Well, all right. I have a couple of things I'd like your help with.
Oh?
Yes, I have some. I'm not quite sure of what acronym to use for it yet. Maybe ACK is the best one, like the AKA children, I don't know, something. I want the acronym for it to be ACK.
Because, like ACK, you mean?
Yeah, like arming the children, having the the children have AK-47s, so that as your average disturbed person will think twice.
Guns for tots.
Right, guns for tots. That sounds good.
GTT. Oh, you mean?
But I'd like it to sound sort of like onomatopoetic, like ack, 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 you know, like getting a round off. Now, I got this letter from our friend Ponderosa Pine. Did you see that? I think you forwarded it to me.
Yes, I did.
He claims that the murder of these children was a CIA plot to help to get the guns out of the hands of the revolutionaries.
He was a pacifist. That's one aspect of it. Another thing is, you know, that and I sent that to a few people, one of whom is a real conspiracy, you know, that's the grid through which he perceives the outside world, and who immediately said, well, of course, there were Manchurian candidates. Don't forget about Sirhan. Now,
drones, zombies.
Well, yeah, it's, you know, the fact that 175 kids have been killed by drones from the United States in Pakistan.
Right.
It's far away. It's far away in space measurement, far away in people's minds, far and away we don't identify with their families. But this the moment the news came on and I understood what was going on, I said that this is a tipping point in terms of that, because everybody, if they haven't raised a kid of their own, know people who have raised kids and knows the horror of such a loss. And this includes people in Congress, it transcends the partisanship. I mean, it still exists. I on Fox News they were talking about how quickly Obama started using this so they could have gun control. If you go back and forth between MSNBC and Fox News,
political objectives.
It's what?
Yeah, that's what they. That's what Rush Limbaugh said, something about political objectives, and Sean Hannity said.
But Sean Hannity is one who's changing his mind about
well, sure.
Mind control.
Sure, they all will change their minds as they get the word from their audiences that they have revealed their insanity.
Okay, so this is in answer to your rhetorical question about what can be done. It starts with waking up people, and that's what has happened. This massacre has. Well, awaken people
I don't mean to interrupt you or to. I do that often, I know.
I don't mind.
But so we will do something about guns, right? And then in China, where they don't have guns, someone will stab 20 children with a knife, which also happened during the same week. There's this kind of open season on children. You know, it's like we're all Branch Davidians on this bus.
Well, it's like there's an epidemic of insanity.
Yeah.
It's tragic. There's, you know, every breath we take, there's some tragedy going on somewhere. And again, it comes back to evolution. You know, what you're describing is human nature. Yeah. And I think that human nature evolves along with everything else. So, you know, I'm saying that in about things that won't happen in our lifetime. You know, evolution is a slow process. As I say, there's a little blip here and a blip here, but, I'd be curious to see what the human race is like in a few centuries or maybe eons. But it's so. I think what there was a new concept. That maybe it was an old concept, but it was renewed during when the counterculture began to explode. Was the sense of conscious evolution? You know, that it wasn't just. In other words, the apes didn't. Concentrate on how they could become human.
Speaking of becoming human, this is WBAI in New York City, WFTE in Mount Cobb, Pennsylvania, and in Scranton. And this is Bob Fass, Radio Unnamable. I'm talking to Paul Krasner, who is editor emeritus of The Realist, author of 20 or 30 books, and...
It's closer to a dozen.
Really? Well, you better get busy, because that's what I tell people, at least 20 or 30 books. Paul Krasner is one of the best minds of my generation, and I'm very pleased to have him here this morning on Radio Unnamable discussing the end of the world. Which this very well may be. Certainly the end of our telephones here at WBAI. We have had lots and lots of trouble getting telephone calls. There is another line that's ringing, but when we answer it, what we seem to get is, hi, you're on the radio.
Hi, it is I, just the one you wanted to not hear from.
Oh, Cloudy, those are the old days, Cloudy.
One hello?
You've redeemed yourself, Cloudy. Go ahead.
Okay, one of the things about those children in China that were stabbed is they lived.
Yes.
That's a big difference. I mean, even though it's a tragedy, there's a world of difference between, you know, knives and guns.
Yeah, but the impulse is the same, isn't it?
Yes, the impulse is there.
But what was the origin of the impulse? Why defenseless children rather than,
if you have a mind to go around stabbing people or shooting people, I guess you wouldn't mind doing it to children. I mean, you're already there.
Because they are defenseless.
Totally evil, so you might as well just, you know, I mean, as for the Mayan apocalypse thing, you know, basically what apparently it is, I looked at something on the web and they explained it's like when your clock turns, if it's a numerical clock, at 11:59 and 59 seconds, and then it turns to midnight, all the digits move. You know, every digit just about except one changes. Well, this is it becomes the number 13,000, or 13 gazillion, in the Mayan calendar. It goes 12,999,999.
And then it goes back to zero. Is that what you're saying?
No, it doesn't. It just goes to 13,000 from 12,999,999. In their accounting system, which goes by 19, 18, 20, and whatnot. But if we are going to learn from this, we figure that along comes Saturday, which is coming soon in some parts of the world anyway, and everybody sneers about it. But, you know, in a sense, the time is running out on global climate catastrophe. And so maybe the Mayan calendar turns out, if it's clairvoyant, to be more precious than we thought. We're right about the deadline. We're already past the point of no return, according to 350.org. And we're approaching the tipping point. We're approaching the point of no return. Is Paul Krasner there? Can he hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, hi. So what are you going to do now in terms of the world? Maybe you could start up the realist again, or is that something you don't want to go back to?
The thing is that there's the question is if the world is going to end tonight, will there be an afterlife? And I don't believe in any kind of afterlife, so therefore I believe that whenever anybody dies, the world is ending for them. And so everybody can experience it. And you never know when it's going to happen to you because, you know, things, I know somebody who wants to commit suicide, but there are too many things that he has to take care of because he's been a responsible person all his life, and now he wants to be responsible in his death. So I think of death every day because when I was 9 years old, I had a crazy aunt who tried to kill me, and so I realized how random it can be, and so I was fortunate enough, rather than having been traumatized, it gave me a philosophy of living in the present, because you never know how much future you have. So but I agree with what you were saying, because I'm talking about on a personal level, but in terms of the environment, I've always seen, we have 20 years, you know, then 10 years. Okay, we're not going to last 5 more years. And there's a sense of optimism, even though you hear all these doomsday predictions in terms of and that we know there's evidence of it from the, you know, from the ice breaking up in the Antarctic to the weather that's going on right now. And it was shocking to see that that it became a partisan issue of whether there was climate change or not. And even though there have been a few who, you know, who suddenly decided they're going to be, since history seems so short, they might as well be on the right side of it. But it's shocking that politicians would call environmentalists a special interest. You know, so the timing is interesting because, you know, I try to have an open mind, but I don't believe in predicting the future, although you can sometimes see trends but I wonder what the Mayans had in mind, you know. Maybe they're really saying, we were just bleeping with you.
You're on the air, too. Hi. Hello?
Hello, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I can you fellas hear me okay?
Sure, fine.
Okay, let me see if I can pop it up a little bit on my end. Just bear with me a second here. Just a moment. Okay, that should be better. Hello?
It's fine.
Yeah, I just want to say that the thing that would happen, what is the name of the gentleman you spoke about? His mother tried to kill him, or his aunt? What was that?
What was that?
Hello?
I what's your question? I didn't get it.
Oh, the gentleman just spoke about the trauma he experienced where his...
Oh, when his aunt tried to kill him. That's Paul Krasner.
Yeah, hi, Paul.
Hi.
That obviously has some formative effect on your notion of the world and the cosmos, and so it may have been a very psychologically, and I'm not coming from a place of judgment, maybe I'm trying to play ad hoc, you know, psychologist here. It became very comforting for you, perhaps, there, to not believe in anything bigger than us guiding us. And you know, my notion around this is, and I'm not proselytizing for anything, I'm not arguing for any view, all views and non-views are valid. I just find it interesting, a lot of people who are certain about non-existence, I often see that it's based on something that happens. It might come from a place of historical oppression of their group or whatever, or some personal trauma. Yet, you know, if you look for synchronicities, you can see that they're there, or, you know, whatever, metaphysics, astrology. You can see connective tissue. You can see where things add up and where things have a sense of connectedness. But, again, you know, each person does whatever they're going to do to help them get along in the world. Hello?
Yeah, we're listening.
Yeah. Sorry, the connection's a little bad here.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll hang up and listen, okay?
No, well, we were listening to you. What you're saying is quite fine and valid. So, as a matter of fact, there was a program on earlier today, don't know whether you heard it, where someone talked about the effect of trauma, the trauma of being interviewed, as a matter of fact. Are you being traumatized now?
Especially if you're interviewed by Barbara Walters. I mean, who could get over that, I would imagine. But, there's nothing that could overcome that.
Well, now, when you said, this is Paul again.
Paul.
Unless I misunderstood, but if you were implying that having a crazy aunt who tried to kill me when I was 9 years old is related to not believing in an afterlife?
Well, it may be a part of it. It may be some part. I'm not saying it's the whole shebang, but it might be a part of it.
I remember when I became an atheist was when the atomic bomb was dropped, and I suddenly was forced to question my concept of God. You know, how could a
forgiving, compassionate,
sure,
right?
Yeah, all knowing, all
right.
You know, and the biggest rationalization is that religious people do is when there's a even for this massacre, even for a horror like that, they'll still say God has a purpose.
Yeah.
You know,
sure, to, sure.
And
you know that I have a problem. That just sounds so, but now I'm petty, and it almost sounds like, well, we don't have an answer either, so we'll make up one. You know,
I don't judge that. You know, if people need a crutch, you know, I use a cane to walk around, and it's no better or worse than an emotional crutch, which people need when they suddenly have their, you know, there's all different metaphors for it, a hole in their heart or you know, that life is not the same for them because of such a loss. And so so I don't, you know, as an atheist, when it was just implausible to me to think that that God could help that many people at one time. It just was implausible. But I was militant about it at first, you know, and felt superior. And then I realized that the change came for me when I realized that Martin Luther King was a Christian, and I admired very much what he stood for and what he did. And George Lincoln Rockwell, the head of the American Nazi Party, he called himself an agnostic, and I abhorred what he stood for and did. So it just changed me into not making any difference to me what people believed. It was how they acted. You know, whether it was being unnecessarily rude to a waitress in a restaurant that I would disapprove of, the act, not whatever that person believed, all the way up to people in legislative positions who try to bring their religious demands of control and make them into law. And so that's what I judge them by, not what by belief, but what they put into practice. So
I will also say this part. I think there's also a danger of looking at things from the other side of the spectrum and sort of seeing what I would call secular materialism as its own kind of altar to be worshipped at, and not seeing that every value system has its limitations. And that very often when people are reacting with justifiable moral outrage to a system where they see so much hypocrisy, they then want to create a religion or a sort of pseudo-religion of something that goes in the opposite direction without seeing the inherent limitations of that value system for what it has. And every value system has its limitations. Had that gentleman from that party not been in it, were you like an interim agnostic, excuse me, or atheist, and then his declaring his agnosticism? Was that what catapulted you into atheism? And then what if he had been, you know, the opposite? What would that have created, like moral dilemma?
Look, I'm as much as I am against, as much as I'm for the separation of church and state, there can, in the sense that you're talking about, there's another, in China. Now, China is officially an atheist country, and I'm against that, too. People should be able, you know, shouldn't have to not believe in something. I mean, you talk about thought control. And not only that, but China is famous for its terrible human rights repression of that. You know, the fact that they're atheists does not make them necessarily moral people. Every atheist I know tries to be a moral person. But that doesn't mean that all atheists are moral.
And it's important to understand that China, like in the U.S., is many things, and it's many things that it says it is that it isn't, and there are so many forces play a place that vast and that ancient, and there's also the veneer of underlying Buddhism and other religions and Western religions there that you know, just because they're not state approved doesn't mean they aren't a part of the current of thought, for good and bad and in between. You know, it's like...
And Confucianism, that's
also
yeah, exactly.
There's
different.
A danger in trying to think that, well, this is what that is, and this is what we are, or, you know, that whole kind of encapsulation of thought, that there's a big danger in trying to see things that way for the sake of the intellectual expediency.
May I ask what you do?
What planet am I from?
No,
you want me to take you to my show you my leader?
No, what's your...
I can't sing leader and I can't speak German either, so don't even go there.
What is your interest in this spiritual world?
I've spoken to you before. I'm Austin. I'm the guy who called up eons ago, speaking about my father's death in the blackout in '77. And I don't know the circumstances under which he lost his life to this day. It's mired in mystery. Remember we had that discussion a few months back?
Of course I do,
back?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
So that would be me, yeah.
Well, I appreciate your continued listenership.
Well, I appreciate you gentlemen being there. You guys have a wonderful, you know, if we make it tomorrow, we'll talk about this conversation. And if not, we won't remember it. So, hey, good night, gentlemen.
Good night.
Good night.
Yeah. Interesting, Paul.
Well, you know, I like the phrase he just used, mired in mystery.
Yep. Write it down.
I don't have to write it down. It's seared on my forehead.
Well, should we take another call?
Why not?
Telephone seems to be intermittently working. 917-580-6020. Wavy Gravy has been working with kids for years and years and years, so I wonder what his take is on this sudden turning of kids into game.
Doing what?
Turning kids into the hunted, being... predators.
Oh,
kids. Hi, you're on the radio.
Oh, his take is, I mean, his take is the same horror we feel. But I guess him especially, just because he can identify so much with, you know, I was a counselor at his camp Winter Rainbow, and I was the comedy counselor, and helped them with their paper. The newspaper, yeah. and I watched, and you know, like they, it was for performing arts, and they would have a tightrope for the kids to learn how to walk on, but it was only 1 foot off the ground. And
well, they're very interested in safety. I said
absolutely.
To him, well, you know, putting kids on a trampoline makes them more difficult targets, and he said. He said, well, sure, but while they're bouncing around, we have three safety people on each trampoline to make sure that they don't get hurt. Safety is very important to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're on the air. Hi.
Hi, me?
Yes, you.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Oh, well, I'm the one who sometimes flashes things to you, but there were a couple of things that I heard you say that I wanted to come in on. One was that thing of, well, you know how... Dylan says this, all you really did was waste my precious time. When I was at Women's Strike for Peace, he sang, and he said he had just made it up the night before, and of Don't Think Twice. And so when he came to that line of all you did was waste my precious time was very important to us at that time, really. And like the Cuban Missile Crisis, you couldn't swallow. You know, it was so tense. And to be high sitting around with friends and have the TV on and have that Vietnam stuff go on was horrible. You know, I mean, it's nothing like now. I mean, of course, there's still a war going on and everything, but it's not, it doesn't get you the same kind of way. So, yeah, I do think it was, and I spoke at the time to my mother about the world ending, and she said that she had talked to her father, I guess during the Second World War, when people would worry about that, and he said, oh, no, the world's got a lot long way to go. And he said, what Paul Krasner just said, he said, you know, every person's world ends when they die. He said, every head is the world. All right, so anyway, now I'll sing to you. if I were the only girl in the world, and you were the only boy, nothing else would matter in this world today. We could go on living in the same old way. The Garden of Eden,
just for you and me,
for two, with nothing to
nothing
mar
to
our joy. Boom, boom, boom,
boom, boom.
I would say such wonderful things to you.
You do.
There would be such wonderful things to do.
There are.
If I were the only girl in the world, and you were the only boy. Ba-da-bum.
Ba-da-bum. That's really wonderful. Thank you. But she always cuts out right after her last note. But I appreciate her singing. Very nice. And you're on the radio. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello. Oh, it sounds like Aaron Kay. It is.
Nope, not even close.
No,
it's like Marshall.
No, it's B. It's not K. It's B. Hi. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello, B.
And,
right.
Yep. Well, that's what you would know me as, but Paul would know me as Peter.
Peter Rabbit.
You betcha.
Paul?
Huh?
You remember Peter Rabbit?
Oh, yeah. I remember when he decided to change his name from Peter Rabbit into the most popular name that he could so he could fade into the crowd more. And he changed his name to Wang. Wang.
Wang.
Am I right, Wang?
Actually, that was not my idea. That was Wavy's idea.
It's the most common name in the world.
Right.
It might have been Wavy's idea, but you did it.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's what happened. Well, I had to. I was getting on a bus with Peter White Rabbit, and that would have been too confusing.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, but it's...
Well, last time I spoke to you, you were running through the streets of Oakland. Occupying it.
No, the last time you spoke to me, I was organizing a kiss-in, which was successful in the fact that we defeated the anti-sit ordinance in Berkeley.
You can tell us a little more about that.
Well, there was the mayor proposed and put on the ballot an ordinance to make sitting on the sidewalk illegal. And the Obamas first kissed sitting in front of a Baskin-Robbins ice cream on the curb, sharing some ice cream. So we decided to have an ice cream social sit-in on the curb in front of the city council meeting. And, of course, I can't take total credit, but we defeated the anti-sit ordinance by about 2,000 votes, which was a surprise to me. I thought we were going to lose, but we beat them back. And so now we're still legally allowed to sit on the sidewalk. It was mainly a way to get the undesirables out of town. But anyway, so that's what the last time we spoke. Let's see, what else did I say the last time we spoke? The last time we spoke, I said that it was the week before the first presidential debate. And I said something like, unless he unless Obama stuck both his feet in his mouth, he would win the election. Well, I was wrong. He stuck both his feet in his mouth and won the election anyway. In that debate. But let's see, what else is... So how are you doing, Paul? I sent you a letter about 5 or 10 years ago that came back.
Oh?
As your address being bad, because I heard you were asking the question, whatever became of Peter Rabbit?
Oh.
So when I won the Nobel Prize, I sent you a press clipping about it.
Oh,
it was the
Wingnut
Nobel Prize.
Oh, well.
So, anyway.
I must have moved.
Yes, you must have moved. I don't remember where it was to, but in my boxes of paper, which I have piled to the ceiling, every now and then when I'm going through them, I come across the return to sender letter to you with the newspaper clipping in it, which I've been meaning to send to you when I get an address, which I have not been looking for, but now that I've touched base, I probably will.
Okay, well, you can get, mail me at, do you have email?
I have email.
All right.
My email is b@greens.org.
Why don't you email me at paulkrasner@roadrunner.com, and I'll send you my mailing address, my snail mail.
Okay, I think I have I've seen that. I think you're on one of Bob's lists, but I will email you.
Okay, it's my email address is on my website, which is paulkrasner.com. So. Anyway, it's good to hear your voice again, and I haven't seen you in decades.
Decades. I'm still here. At least decades, yes. I believe the last time I saw you... Well, I spoke to you when we had Babylon. I was answering Babylon, and at one point you were taking messages there, I think.
No, I never worked there. I was getting my messages
there,
that's right.
You had... I worked there, and you were you had a message box.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Yes. No, but we've talked since after that. But
we have. I don't.
Yeah,
remember.
Babylon was the predecessor to voicemail, where you had actually humans take your message, and. And it was a good business. It was right in the heart of San Francisco when I had moved there.
Actually, it was in the heart of Berkeley. Grand Central was in the heart of San Francisco.
That's right. Yes.
It was at the Hog Farm House. We had.
Right. Of course.
We had it there.
On Henry
Street. An elephant's memory for pennies a day. Seems like only yesterday.
Yes. Well,
anyway, so, and that was the last time I remember talking to you, but I don't know when we would have talked since then. That would have been, the 1980-ish?
Might have been at one of, were you at Wavy's camp at all?
No, I've never been, well, I missed the picnic that you were at.
Oh, okay, that's why I need any of those events. But
yeah,
anyway.
I would have remembered seeing you. I've been to a bunch of picnics, but not the one that you were at.
Right.
For some reason, I was elsewhere.
And I think Peter White Rabbit at that point had turned into a rabbi.
Peter White Rabbi.
Yes. an organic.
Yes, he had
nickname.
He had gone off and joined he'd become religious. Let's just say that.
Yeah. And he tried to convert me while I was eating lunch.
He tried to. Did he succeed? Were you converted?
No, I fell into hysterical laughter, and which seemed very rude. But the more I tried to stop, the harder I laughed, because he was trying to put a villain around my arm while I was using my fork with the other hand. It was just kind of absurdity at its height. But he was laughing too. You know, it was infectious, so he couldn't get mad. When people are laughing, they're not angry at that moment. That's why I always try to make my parents laugh so that I knew it was on their good side. So anyway, what do you
think? I never thought
say?
Of that.
Peter?
We seem to be breaking up. The technology seems to be breaking down.
Oh.
Is anyone still there? I guess we're gone.
You're there and Paul's there, but I'm going to go ask you to... call another time because I'm going to try to take another call at 917.
Sounds good. I'll listen on the air.
580-6020. Okay. And that's 917-580-6020. And if another call doesn't come in now, Paul, I'm going to play some more music. I hope you'll stay for a while.
Okay, sure. A little while. Another half hour.
Oh, maybe. Maybe a little longer than that, but music from Easter Island for the end of the world.
Cause the word gone wrong. I can't be good no more, once like I did before. I can't be good, baby, honey, because the world's gone wrong. I told you, baby, right to your head, if I didn't leave you, I would have to kill you dead. I can't be good no more, once like I did before. I can't be good, baby, honey, because the world's gone wrong. I tried to be loving and treat you kind, but it seems that now, right, got no love in mind. I can't be good no more, once like I did before. I can't be good, baby, honey, because the world's gone wrong. If you have a woman and she don't be kind, pray to the good Lord, Joe, get her off your mind. I can't be good no more, once like I did before. I can't be good, baby, honey, because the world's gone wrong. Then when you've been good now, can't do no more, just tell her kindly, there is a front door. I can't be good no more, once like I did before. I can't be good, baby, honey, because the world's gone wrong. Pack up my suitcase, give me my hand. No use to ask me, baby, because I'll never be back. I can't be good no more, once like I did before. I can't be good, baby, honey, because the world's gone wrong.
His 2013 run.
Much of this does require state legislation. That doesn't mean that we don't study the issues and propose the solutions that I believe are necessary for New York City's long-term economic future.
Even if they don't get Albany's attention.
He has the ability to take his ideas to Albany and you know, convince us that we should pass them.
These ideas might attract some voters. In Midtown, Courtney Gross, New York 1.
New York One. Well, that's a far cry from the blues.
A new day coming, everything gonna be turning over. Everything gonna be turning over. Where you gonna be standing when it comes? For far too many years I've been marching, singing and talking, doing things I thought would make me free. While people halfway around the world, they've been fighting and dying and bleeding. Now it seems that they're gonna be. There's a new world coming. Everything gonna be turning over. Everything gonna be turning over. Where you gonna be standing when it comes? You know the book, the Bible, you read it and you see. It will surely come to pass, this is how it's gonna be. Though they come and gain the earth, them that shuddered at the bottom would rise and rule the world. There's a new world coming, everything gonna be turning over. Everything gonna be turning over. Where you gonna be standing when it comes? The nations of Asia and Africa, they're taking over their lives. The sisters and brothers south of us, oh, finally. Then take a look, United States of the North American clime. Your strange mixture of wealth and hate, you won't be exempt this time. There's a new world coming, everything is turning over. Everything is turning over. Where you gonna be standing when it comes? There's a new world coming. Everything gonna be turning over. Everything gonna be turning over. Where you gonna be standing? Where you gonna be standing? Where you gonna be standing when it comes?
Our long time in this world has stood, gets more wicked every day. The good maker who created it won't let it stand this way.
This world can't stand long, be ready, don't wait too late. We should know it can't stand long, or if too full of hate. Thank you.
Let's see if there's a signal on this CG.
There's a new day coming. Everything gonna be turning over. Everything gonna be turning over. Where you gonna be standing when it comes? There's a new day coming. Everything gonna be turning over. Everything gonna be turning over. Where you gonna be standing when it comes? For far too many years I've been marching, singing and talking, doing things I thought would make me free. While people halfway around the world, they've been fighting and dying and bleeding. Now it seems that they're gonna be. There's a new world coming. Everything gonna be turning over. Everything gonna be turning over. Where you gonna be standing when it comes? You know the book, the Bible, you read it and you see. It will surely come to pass, this is how it's gonna be. Though to come and gain the earth, them that shuddered at the bottom would rise and rule the world. There's a new world coming. Everything gonna be turning over. Everything gonna be turning over. Where you gonna be standing when it comes? The nations of Asia and Africa, they're taking over their lives. To sisters and brothers, south of us, oh, finally, then take a look at the United States of the North American clime. Your strange mixture of wealth and hate, you won't be exempt this time. There's a new world coming. Everything is turning over. Everything be turning over. Where you gonna be standing when it comes? There's a new world coming. Everything gonna be turning over. Everything gonna be turning over. Where you gonna be standing? Where you gonna be standing? Where you gonna be standing when it comes?
Well, where are we? Where are we standing?
We're alive.
We're alive, but
yes,
the mic
we're alive.
Isn't.
We're alive, and I have to hang up the phone, which is tangled.
Who were you talking to, so?
Oh, I was talking to Paul.
Was he still there?
He is still there, but he certainly
why
is.
Why don't you just take your earphones off?
Yeah, how does that happen? But I didn't want to have it there.
You just hang the phone up put my mic on.
Your mic is on. We're on.
No, it isn't really.
Yeah. Oh, no. Okay.
That's it. That's it. That was your mic. Paul, are you still there?
No, I will call him. After all that.
Why don't you just hang it up?
I was trying, but I was tangled. I still am.
Well, so even if you're tangled, hang up the tangle.
I'm trying to get the tangle out.
I didn't want to lose Paul.
Yeah.
Paul, where are you? It's the end of the world.
No, it's not.
And Paul is gone.
Let's get him right there.
How did that happen?
Well, I hung on that outside.
What were you talking to him about there for so long while I was answering a call of nature?
I know. It happens.
Bill.
We'll get him right back.
Bill, listen to me. Just hang it up and call Paul.
I am doing just that.
Can just hang the phone up and...
Can you untangle first?
All right, well, I guess I could... I could tell a story, I guess, sure. Or... I could reminisce about something.
It'll only be a minute, anyway.
Does anyone remember Gary McGivern?
Sure.
Gary McGivern was one of the reasons, I'm afraid, that our present governor isn't going to give anyone clemency. Because Gary McGivern, Jack Abbott, were given clemency, and both of them committed other crimes when they were free. Now, that proves nothing, but in the newspapers and in the media, it became perfect proof that granting clemency, being aware that sometimes a sentence of 40 or 50 years is not appropriate to reforming character. It is incredibly expensive for the state. I believe that Dana Beale is going to be released because... the state that has imprisoned him has decided that his medical condition is just too expensive for them to maintain him in custody. He was in released on bail, and I think he's now back in Durance Vile, but he certainly does not deserve to be imprisoned. This is a guy who managed to provide people in pain and with terrible diseases a way to make things a little bit more comfortable, to make their appetite a little bit more vital, and to stay alive. And he, as a result of that, was transporting marijuana from one place to another. And he was so convinced of his absolute correctness, that what he was doing was so positive and good, that he neglected to make sure that his license plates were on straight, that the taillights in the car were correctly placed, or whatever it was that drew him to the attention of someone who stopped him and smelled marijuana. Now, that smelling marijuana is not probable cause for further search. But I think that, they could have refused the search. I don't think that they were able to exercise all of their rights properly. And Dana was arrested, and while he was in prison, he had a serious heart attack and... various other medical conditions erupted, and he served quite a good deal of time, and he really should be released for the community service that he's already performed. I don't know. I think, you know, it's not the end of the world if... someone who does good has to break a law or two in order to do good. Who was the philosopher who said, a civilized man breaks one illogical law a day? And you have no idea the circus that's going on in this control room with computers like trying to lie down. Are we going to get Paul Krasner back on the air? No, you can't.
Paul is here. Paul is here now, I hope.
Paul?
Yeah.
I've been vamping until ready, and you were there all along.
No, not all along. No. I lost you, and then I kept calling the number, and I heard an automatic female machine voice saying this number is out of service.
I think I lost.
Oh, maybe you called our other number.
No, I called the number that you gave me. But anyway,
here you
and
are.
Then I heard you talking, and then I put my computer on and listened, and then kept trying to call, and then finally Bill reached me. So here we are.
Well, Bill is working very hard.
Okay, it's okay. I had an ice cream break.
Oh, you sound refreshed.
Yes, I've been rejuvenated.
I wish that mine were as nice as ice cream, but it was just a break. Good to talk to you again, Paul. And yes, and now that we seem to have gone into the 21st, at least in New York, it may appear that we're not going to have that apocalypse.
What a relief!
Well, how could it's not like what was the talk of at the millennium, that there was going to be a crossover, a change, what was previously wrong would become right, and what was right would become wrong.
But, you know, this one had, I've been in a workshop led by Terence McKenna, the late Terence McKenna, and he did on a computer. I can't explain it in technical terms, but it was essentially going through history, working out the novelty. Novelty meant it could be evil novelty, like Hitler, or it could be very positive novelty, like Albert Einstein. So, but it was not a case of, it's hard to describe, but he would make these graphs all along through history and all of the times, and it coincided with the Mayan calendar about when the end of the world would be. And then there were other aspects of it, so it was like it was an umbrella with different spokes of people who believed the world was going to end then, you know, different cults or different prognosticators. And so it had a certain force of people, and so many things have been happening now, so many signs that can be perceived as the end of the world that many people believed it.
I think the scientific term is end times. That's what they say. But there have been numerous instances throughout history where, you know, someone has said, well, the end of the world is going to be next Tuesday at 3:30, and we all have to put on white robes and sell all we possess or give it away. Just sign those leases over there to my uncle and come up to the top of this hill. And we'll just, like, wait for the end.
And they had to
and
leave
we'll
their clothes
all
behind.
Be in glory. you know, I think that's probably what happened to the Branch Davidians.
Well, the Branch Davidians were, like any of these, any of these cults, the mere fact that people get seduced to come into them, is a form of hypnosis, you know, and then they just perpetuate it with their own self-hypnosis.
Well, you studied the Mansons pretty carefully.
Charles Manson, you know, learned a lot of his
education in manipulating people in prison, where it's, you know, manipulation is the name of the game. And he learned about hypnotism. He learned about encounter games. He learned about Scientology. He learned about ways. In fact, when he was in court, and he had this sheaf of papers, and, you know, and he was going back to his cell, and this prisoner saw him, African-American prisoner who looked at him and said, "Hey, you know, I don't want to hear about your religion. I don't want to hear about your games. I just want to know, how'd you get them girls to do what you said to do?" And Manson said, "I got a knack."
Speaking of knacks, this is WBAI in New York City. I'm talking to Paul Krasner here on Radio Unnameable. My name is Bob Fast. That's Bill Propp over there, who's reminding us that WBAI is joined by WFTE in Scranton and in Mount Cobb, Pennsylvania. And we're talking about the end of the world as we know it.
You know, during your little musical interlude there, I was thinking about the callers. It's very interesting when you step back and think, you know, the uniqueness of Radio Unnameable, that, you know, there was a man who called who was very philosophical and very very articulate and tried to be as objective as he could and open-minded. And then there was the woman who called, and then she sang beautifully at the end of it. And then Peter Rabbit called, and I didn't realize, but what a wonderfully absurd thing that he was Peter Rabbit. But he changed his name to Wong because he didn't want to get confused with Peter White Rabbit. You know, and also that I was listening to these calls and just took, you know, said, okay, you know, just regular calls, when they really are, each one is charming in its own way, you know. It's a good way to go out of the world.
Well, it is a fairly unique group that listen to this program. I'm proud to say that we have some remarkably intelligent people and some very sensitive,
publishing the realist.
Informed,
you know, it's a
two-way people.
Street. I learned as much from the readers as they learned from the stuff that I published.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was a mere boy when I walked into the radio station. And now I'm a fat old man, and yet, in my time, I have assimilated some of the thoughts of some of the great minds of my time, to wit, Paul Krasner, who was here this morning. So Paul was a witness to some important social movements in his time. Paul fostered the underground press, they say. Paul made it possible to talk about the war in Vietnam on late-night television.
Some people seek some...
You're my tour.
Oh, there I am.
Yeah.
Also help some women who are in need obtain some safe therapeutic abortions. Not himself, he didn't perform them, but he was a referral. And now it's a matter of right in many states. Not all, unfortunately. And that's something that the biblical right or whatever is in power is still trying to reverse. How many decades after Roe? So. In some ways, one step forward, and then possibly that one step back. So it's not all upward and better for everybody. It could be, I mean, there have been mass global extinctions. Maybe that's the one that happened to the dinosaurs, you know, in the Yucatan Peninsula. That might have been one, but there are several others, at least geological evidence for them. And You know, we, what makes us think that human, Homo sapiens might be around? I would bet on the roaches and some other species that have been virtually unchanged in a way throughout, you know, fossil history.
And the dinosaurs never knew that they were going to become oil.
That's right.
Never entered their mind.
We might, too. Something else is ringing in. Let me see what it is.
Sure.
Okay.
Good morning. You're on the radio.
Yes, I hear rustling.
Hello?
Yes, you are on the radio.
Hello?
Can you hear us? You should be able to hear us.
Listen through the phone.
Is that me?
Yeah, that's you. You're on the radio.
Much better. Oh, great. Okay, sorry. Can't believe this phone. Sorry. Hi.
Good morning. It's Hi. George Darrow calling from the shores of Lake Michigan.
Bidding you all fond hello.
Hi, George.
Because, you know, it's not over. Fat lady did not sing. And the bullshit stories keep abounding. And the mines just ran out of space on the disc, man. You know, we missed, they just had to make another disc. We probably didn't find part two.
Uh-huh. Right.
But, we got bigger fish to fry than that.
That's side one.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, Fukushima, I mean, like, you know, all the nuclear plants. I mean, we don't need the mines to predict the end of the world. we're like suicidal. This planet, these people that are running things are suicidal. And I don't know why. It's just getting on my nerves. Time for a change. Maybe that's what the Mayans mean. Mm. No, everybody's mind just changes and snaps back into like reality. And these gold vampires and these oil vampires and these here in this really low life, you know, MFs, we should just be, you know, replaced and fired. And just like, you know, put in jail like they should be. And then we can make machines to clean up the air, clean up the water, and clean up the mind, I guess, from this bullshit storm that we've been going through.
No,
you
know, this is safe harbor. We can assume that there are no uncorrupted children listening at this hour, that any child who's up at this hour already knows these words. But,
yeah, that's true.
But all the same, you know, you can say the same thing in a less poetic way, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah. I've been advised against cursing because it kind of puts people off the truth.
Well, that's true. That's very good. That's good. It does. Some people. But, you know, we're talking on a very wide range of geography now. From
the end of the world, according to some.
Michoacán to Michigan.
And Michigan.
From Michoacán to Michigan.
Oh, wait, another bulletin has been handed to me.
Yes, yes.
There's been a mistake. The Mayan calendar said that it will be the end of the world, Jim. Total mistake.
The end of the world, Jim?
G-Y-M, Jim.
Is that a franchise?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you mean, I thought it was nationwide. It is a chain out on the West Coast.
Oh, okay. That's the only way it would make sense now. Yeah, it could be.
Right. There was a time when I didn't know what a fat boy was. But
I didn't know what an IHOP was.
There used to be a place on 3rd Avenue that they tried to break the whole Eastern Seaboard with this chain called Fat Boy.
Fat Burger.
Fat Burger, yeah. Fat Boy. Yeah. And no one ever went in there. I remember that there was this sad sign that said line forms here, and there was never a line.
If they had written coast to coast below it, they could have one here and one in L.A.
Uh-huh. So they finally decided they couldn't make it. But somehow out west, people don't. I mean, they don't have to spell it P-H-A-T. But fat doesn't seem to have the same toxic feel that it does here in the East.
In fact, low fat sounds good.
People in the Midwest like it.
People in the Midwest like it.
Yeah. They like that, you know, like there's places out here called Potbelly. Places called Potbelly where they make sandwiches, you know, and there's like all kinds of that kind of references out here for different restaurants and stuff. We don't care about that stuff.
Chubbies.
This is the end of the world, so I don't really believe. Who started this rumor anyway?
Gordo's.
What's that?
Gordo's.
Gordo's.
Yeah, when someone was talking to me about how great poutine is. This is the something that our Canadian brothers allegedly love to eat at the end of a cold night.
Isn't he the president of Russia?
It's like gravy and cheese curds and...
no way.
And, you know, everything, and French fried potatoes... All in a sandwich, and
it's like a Twinkie, deep fried Twinkie, except it's not really a Twinkie. One of the food groups.
Yeah,
hold on to your Twinkie. They're going to be collector's items very soon.
Right. Well, Paul.
It's the end of the world, then, eh?
Well, I mean, have you been keeping your eye on TV? The weather seems to be kind of. Stable all parts of the world now.
Tripped out. We did not have a winter here last year in Wisconsin, who's known for its winters. We did not get our winter last year, and this year the snow keeps turning to rain. It won't even stay cold. And I'm not making that up. And it's been consecutive for 7 years. I saw every year completely changed. Bing, 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 bing. Nothing is the same. Not to mention a drought. So, wake up, people. We got to fix this, people, and fire everyone that's running everything. Wherever they're running, who's ever in charge of every department, they're fired. And we got to reform the government. That's it. You know, the declaration says, you know, form a new government and abolish this one and start a new one. So they're permanently abolished, so we're going to start over. We don't need any guns to do that. It's a bloodless revolution. They're just fired, man. They are screwing everything up. They're fracking everything up.
Fracking.
Fired. Not only in this country, all the countries. That everyone that's a failure, you're fired. Bing, you're done.
How are they going to make a living?
No, we don't need money after that. Who gives a flying fart? We got dolphins, you know, we got to protect the sea, you know. That's wealth. Air is wealth. Water is wealth. Trees are wealth. Oxygen is wealth. Not what we think is wealth, a pile of yellow metal. Come on, man. What are you going to do with that?
George, let me ask you a question. How do you survive?
How do I survive?
What do you do? What do you do for a living?
You know, I got to work. People have to work and make money.
Well, I remember you used to sell.
I used to sell antique collectibles.
Right.
My daddy opened that place up in '62, across the street from the church, around the corner from the church.
On 62nd Street, 63rd Street, yeah.
And then we moved to 2nd and 64. We had fun antiques.
Beautiful, beautiful antiques.
Yeah, we did that for 40 years, and then chicanery and tomfoolery and everything else not cool. We got closed up. Had to close up. But that was 40 years. We had a 40-year run. But now it's different now. You know, people have regular jobs. And it's hard. Scuffling, man. You got to work, man. It sucks. But we want to live on Earth, so we want to protect it. And, that's what we're trying to live. Hello?
I think you've said it. What do we
have? I have.
George, thanks for calling.
Love and peace and power, and we gotta abolish this government and form a new one, because they're wrong. Everybody's wrong. Every country that's destroying the world is absolutely wrong, and they're fired, in my opinion. That's the end of the world. Beginning of a new one.
I hope you're on the air. Good morning.
The world is...
Hello?
Hello.
Yes.
I called to it's B again. The reason I called was to tell you that the 13th Bakhtun of the Mayan calendar actually ends on the solstice, which doesn't come to New York till, I think, 6:12.
Something like that, right.
And you'll be off the air.
A.M.
Well,
or maybe it's...
So I'm wrong? It's not the end of the world?
Oh, wait a minute. It is.
Of course, this will be your last show if the world does end at the end of the 13th Bakhtun.
Well, it could happen any moment.
Well, they were pretty good astrologers. They astronomers. They knew when the sun was, you know, their calendar was based on the sun, and when it reaches 23.5 degrees of declination, I think that's when their calendar runs out, which is what this whole thing is based on. I just thought I'd add that to the mix.
Well, that kind of describes what we already know. I mean, does that prove that it's more likely or unlikely? I mean, maybe the Earth is going to tip over, you know, and the poles
tomorrow
are going to reverse themselves.
That it will do.
The poles are going to reverse themselves. What, are they going to become Czechs?
No, they have reversed themselves over since the creation of the Earth, basically, where the North Pole has a different polarity than it has the opposite polarity of the South Pole, and vice versa. They just switch. You won't even notice it. Your compasses will be a little screwed up for a while.
Before my time, I don't remember it. But I just thought I'd add that to the mix, and I think I'm going to get off the phone and listen to you on the air, or on the internet, or wherever.
Okay, there might be some other people waiting to call. The number, why don't you give the number again, Bill?
9-1-7-5-8-0-6-0-2-0.
6-0-2-0-60-20.
9-1-7.
I have 980.
How'd you get through?
No wonder they said the number was out of...
You must have worked at least once, because here you are. And here Paul, you are.
Paul. Oh.
Yes, hi. It's
Tom from the Bronx.
Long time no chat to.
I'd
like to say...
I do hear you on other programs, though. You're a very active, busy caller.
Well, do you ever remember the old Rocky and Bullwinkle years ago?
The
animation.
I was never a big fan, actually.
Well, okay. You do remember that show anyway. The early animation.
I remember saying, "Turn that off."
The early animation had the world going like a topsy-turvy in one of the episodes.
I miss
where England became tropical and other parts of the world, there was supposed to be like this magic weather box that changed the atmosphere. Environmentally, that was ahead of its time, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that concept, like, you know. And everybody laughed at it.
So how did it come out?
Huh?
How did it come out?
Well, in other words, it was the secret box they had to hunt
right,
down.
Right, but, you know, that's the setup. What was the denouement?
Well, it wasn't the end of the world, but the world reverted back. Like,
things turned out to be what they were.
Yeah, before. Everything turned. Everything. Of course, that was only an animation. But there was a lot of imagination.
I'm hoping that we can somewhere find that this is the first day of a whole new life.
Well, anyway,
as the diggers used to say.
If there is the end of the world, we'll know it, right? And then we'll...
Well, or we won't know it.
Well, let's keep hydrofracking. And one thing's for sure, it's causing more earthquakes. Maybe the continents will go under.
You think that fracking causes earthquakes?
Well, yes, it does. They just had another earthquake somewhere, and they're tying it to hydrofracking.
Well,
out west, they didn't have earthquakes, and they got them now. It's tied to hydrofracking.
You know, you put...
Well, I mean, I'm not saying that's the only reason, but...
You put me in mind of something else. You know, there used to be a kind of turntable that had a tone arm that if you dropped the tone arm, it didn't hit the record. It came down easily because it was damped by something that was viscous, like oil. So if you take the viscous damping material out of the earth, and you take the gas, which also acts as a kind of a shock absorber, out of the earth, obviously the tectonic plates are not going to smack into each other gently. They're gonna clatter and clang.
Kind of like scraping out the cartilage and having bone rubbing against bone.
Right.
Right. I believe that, too. In other words, I was thinking that the oil has something to do with preventing the earth from having violent earthquakes, too. That sounds right. But anyway, eventually something has to happen. So every so many...
It always does.
Millions and millions
something,
of years.
That's one of the truest things you can say about history. Something always happens.
Oh, yeah.
And you know something else about history? The thing that happens is also almost never the thing you anticipated.
Absolutely.
The thing that you worried about happening rarely happens.
Yeah, well, anyway, let's hope for the best. And I don't believe anything's going to happen right away, but one of these days, watch out.
Does that mean there'll be no global warming, no matter what we do? Let's live it up.
Yeah. Well, anyway, have a big fat boy burger there, whatever. Enjoy yourself.
You too. Take care.
Okie doke.
Thanks, Tom.
Right.
And I'm going to try to get another person on the air. The number is
917-580-6020.
Hello?
Oh, it's us chickens.
Well, why don't you play another one of those End the World songs?
I can do that. There is somebody calling, but maybe...
Well, then answer the call.
Okay, why not?
Sure. You're on the radio. Good morning. Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Is there someone there?
Oh, there's another person.
There. Oh, a familiar voice. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It's a 100-mile caller. Is the 3,000-mile caller still on?
No, he's not.
Yeah. Oh, I think he is. Paul, all these years.
He's not here?
Well, Paul? you're the 100-mile caller, and you actually listen on the radio. That's quite an achievement. He listens on the Internet. It's easy on the Internet.
Well, however you listen, it's just important that you do.
Thank you.
That other caller was right about the solstice, and it's 6:12 a.m., so we'll know then for sure. But the Mayans actually had three calendars, a lunar, a solar, and a Venus calendar.
And a pinup calendar, I think.
And a pinup, probably a pinup
Why not?
Calendar.
Do they all say this is the end of the world today? Or the end of the calendar or something like that?
I don't know, but you know, it's something that an earlier caller, that woman that called me at the top of the show about about the missile scare back in the, what was it, 62? I think there's more of a problem now. I mean, there are more unattended warheads now, so it may be a time to throw caution to the winds, as some people did back then. But I'm curious, did anyone hear the Democracy Now program with Leonard, the live interview with Leonard Peltier?
Was that this morning?
No, I don't remember if it was this morning or yesterday morning. The days sometimes run together, but
I think it's on Staten Island cable. It's on opposite this program. I don't like that. You know, I'm on opposite Amy Goodman.
Well, oh, you're complimentary. Think of it that way.
The way it ended is Amy asked him what his hopes were, and he was hoping to get
clemency.
What his sentence was supposed to be a life sentence, but I think in the state that he was convicted in, the life sentence he would be eligible for parole in 7 years. So after 30-some years, he's served at least
34,
5 or 6 or 7 life sentences. Yeah. But he was hoping for a medical release for his hope is a medical release for a home arrest and a pardon from Obama.
Is there something that people can do to aid him in that? Write letters?
Bob, your volume is very low again. I'm really sorry.
I'm sorry. Is there something that people can do, people who have goodwill toward him could maybe write a letter to...
Well, of course, but
you can call the White House.
Yeah, and it's a really easy number, although I don't remember it right now. I could fish it out, probably. The article that you read from last week from The Nation, really, really should mention that again to folks so they could go to it. I'm not online, so someone did print it out for me, and it's quite lengthy, but it's also very...
About fracking's effect on the food chain.
Exactly.
A lot of cattle have had to be destroyed because they've been made ill by the contamination caused by fracking. It's
exactly
serious.
And
you can't really grow vegetables with water that has been fracked in.
Well, also there's an organization of chefs. The New York the metropolitan area has a lot of organic restaurants that really count on organic food grown in this area, but there are scenes even from Gasland where an inspector was inspecting a strawberry field and wouldn't even sample one of the strawberries. The plants were so sickly. But anyway, that website is thenation.com, and Fracking Our Food Supply is the article. And I guess it was posted November 28th, a couple of issues ago.
Do you know the woman who wrote the article?
Well, I don't know the pronunciation of her name. It's R-O-Y-T-E, Elizabeth Royt, right? Something like that?
Right. Paul?
She's right, and she wrote.
Is Paul Krasner still on the line?
Yeah, I'm here.
Good.
Oh, hi, Paul.
Hi.
3,000-mile caller.
Yeah, if you go by the way the crow flies.
or the satellite. Let me ask you, have you heard in the news about the leasing of 150,000 acres in the Monterey area? Are you anywhere near that?
No, I used to live near there, but I haven't heard anything about it. What are they going to do with it?
Well, they're leasing the land for hydrofracking for natural gas.
Oh, what a shame. It's...
right under vineyards.
Boy, talk about... fracking was one of the euphemisms that some sitcom used on the air, and all of a sudden it's becoming literally profane. Ken Kesey and I were once discussing his second book, Sometimes a Great Notion, and he told me that it was really about women's liberation. And I said, really, why do you say that? Well, he said, because the theme of it was about raping the earth.
Mm.
And he made that connection. And that's what has been done. That's, you know, the previous caller who just wants everybody thrown into prison, who deserves to be there, that's very idealistic in a way. You don't see many Wall Street people in prison now. Mm. Just a few who are probably scapegoats to begin with.
Mm.
But I'm still optimistic, but it may be from brain damage from taking too much acid.
Well, we have to be optimistic. But you know, as far as the end of the world, if we keep punching holes in it and sucking out all the fossil fuels, we may deflate the earth.
It's not just raping; it's cannibalizing. It's a
combination. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there was actually a little item in the news in the last couple of weeks about a New York City policeman who confided that he wanted to meet some women on the internet, take them someplace private, and rape, kill, and eat them.
Oh, cops have to eat also.
I thought that was a misunderstanding. I'd like to have them for dinner.
Yeah.
Meeting at his penthouse.
To serve and protect.
You know, I really don't know whether it started out as a joke, but he was suspended. They took away his dentures.
Well, it's only a joke because he didn't get to do it.
Well, that's right. That's right. There were some people who may have disappeared into his freezer as well. I haven't heard any more about it.
Well, there was what's his name, Jeffrey Dahmer.
That's right.
Actually, did that, and you know, and the trial of him was very interesting. There was because one of the witnesses for the defense was a psychiatrist who said that it came out in the testimony that Jeffrey Dahmer had used condoms when. He had these encounters with his victims, and so that it showed that he was taking precaution, and that was an indication. No, this must have been for the prosecutor. I'm sorry, not the defense. And this was an indication that he was sane.
Was the precaution for his victim's benefit or for his benefit?
Well, no, for the prosecutor's benefit.
Yeah, for the prosecution, ultimately. So that he was saying that he had that foresight to wear a condom, so it occurred to me that would be a perfect public service announcement on the media. If Jeffrey Dahmer is sane enough to practice safe sex, what about you?
It's a successor to, if it's good enough for the astronauts.
Did they wear condoms in space?
They might have. I know they drank Tang. No orange in it whatsoever.
No, it was pure, just orange-painted sand.
Well, it's strange, you know. I was talking before about this doctor who ran the chemical warfare laboratory in the Army. He once submitted an article to Playboy magazine called Sex in Outer Space.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Really? It's funny because I published an article by the late Bob Abel in The Realist
called Is There Sex in Outer Space? And the idea came up at a party where Calvin Trillin was there, and he was pointing out that it was a well-kept secret by NASA that the men, at the point where all the astronauts were men, that they found that zero gravity resulted in unintended erections. So,
and bone loss.
That developed into the question.
And what?
And bone loss.
That's interesting.
That's happened
quite
here
a
on
combination.
Earth.
Did you say boner loss?
That too.
Well, there was. Well, it's funny how Beener. I think he started crying early on in his career when all the kids in school made fun of his name. That can be traumatic.
The astronaut Alan Bean.
Was this Lanza? Who's
who?
The kid.
I was referring to
the guy who shot his mother because she made fun of his name.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
How would you what like to go through school being called Mario?
No, I was talking about John Boner, Beener. Oh. I hear his name pronounced either way by either, but Stephanie Miller. It's like some people still call
he's the guy
Reagan, Regan.
He's the guy who wants to, sell Social Security, you know, to reduce the amount of money that us geezers get.
He's the, the House, what do they call him, the House, the Speaker of the House.
Right, and he has a plan B to, you know, to avert the fiscal cliff by stealing money from Social Security. He's a bad guy.
I thought he wanted everybody to take a morning after pill.
Before they were born.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, John Boner. That's what I call him.
Paul, what are the chances of you doing an online publication?
Me?
Yes.
You
wouldn't have
I
to go through.
I started for a while, but I'm working on a book. You know, the purpose of The Realist really was to set an example of communication without compromise. And with the internet, you know, with exceptions here and there, that's pretty much what has happened. And so The Realist served its purpose. All the issues are online. All you have to do is Google.
Well, it served that purpose for you, but for millions of people, it served the purpose of keeping us in touch with Paul Krasner's mind.
Right, and everything contained in it was thoroughly vetted by you, so it must be true.
And you wrote pieces yourself, and you. So I mean, what if there were suppose there were a Krasner report rather than a Huffington Report. Not that I have any qualms with Huffington Report.
I'm working on my first novel, which is, and it's a challenge for me. As I said to a friend, Avery Corman, who's a novelist, he did Oh God and Kramer versus Kramer, both of which became movies. And I was saying to him that it's hard to write fiction. You have to make up everything. And he said, come on, Paul, you've been making stuff up all your life. And I had to explain, you know, yeah, but that was journalism. So, but anyway, that's what Ken Kesey would call my current obsession. And so, you know, it's like Dylan going from folk music to rock and roll, and he got booed at the folk festival in Newport when he did the first electronic presentation of Like a Rolling Stone. So
Maggie's Farm.
So you know, an artist has to choose what they what they want to express the way they want to express it, and sometimes the audience doesn't like the change, but So it's just a new challenge. When I wrote about what was going on in, like, the Yippies, say, I could describe Abbie Hoffman because, you know, having Medusa hair. But there it was. I was just writing what I perceived. But it's a different kind of challenge to come up with stuff that that you're not basing on what you've experienced and observed, or using the opportunity to take what.
Oh, you, now I see why you're talking about journalism.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, you could say that about a lot of stuff in the New York Times. You're basing your what you write on things that you haven't experienced.
Well, you know what? the General Petraeus was very hand-in-hand with Judith Miller, who wrote for the New York Times about the war, oh, that war,
right.
and in Iraq, and the whole...
She never heard a military press conference that she didn't believe absolutely.
She was
a great asset to the Bush administration.
She used to work here, come to think of it.
That's right.
She used to work at where? At BAI?
Yeah, no. Yeah.
Judy Miller?
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Really?
As in what capacity?
She was in the news department for a while, I believe.
Huh, really?
Mm-hmm. And well, she went on to bigger and better things.
You know, I wonder, and now she's on Fox. She's a pundit on the Fox News.
Quite a shift from avoiding war to starting a war.
People like to wield power.
Well, actually, that was Hearst's claim to fame, wasn't it? He talked about the Spanish-American War as the Journal's Little War. How do you
like the
Journal's Little War?
Yeah, wasn't it Cuba? No, I guess it was...
Yeah.
Remember,
the Maine.
Power is
remember the Tonkin Gulf. Remember the WMDs. Remember?
Oh, I remember it was a phrase that I kept, weapons of mass destruction.
None of them happened. That's what ties them all together.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, you know, at what point is destruction mass? You know, I think that the massacre in Connecticut, I think there's a weapons of mass destruction. Why don't they, you know, where do they draw the line? I guess they draw the line when they want to get reelected.
Well, they're Americans rather than faceless people going to a wedding party in Pakistan or someplace.
Oh, it's true, and innocent. They always say they killed innocent children or innocent bystanders, as if they were guilty of something. You could have not a vagabond. What's the word I want? When somebody takes over vigilante, that, you know, it implies vigilantes, you know. It's like that's violence that was insensible. And then you try to have to figure out what is sensible violence. And everybody rationalizes it.
A legitimate violence rather than illegitimate violence.
No. Well, you know, there are...
Illegitimate violence cannot resort in wounds. Just as illegitimate rape cannot resort to pregnancy or...
Yeah, that was some quote.
Yeah, who was that? Evans?
It sounds like you're writing... fortune cookie motto.
Wasn't there a guy who crawled out from under a rock during this last election and said that if a woman is raped?
Oh yeah, that was Todd Akin.
Right, Akin. Yeah, so she won't conceive unless she partially agreed to it, or God wanted it to happen.
That may have helped torpedo Romney, among other things.
Right.
But he got that from a doctor. He called the doctor and said, "Tell me, is stupidity right for me, doctor?"
Right.
Well, it's great to hear. It's great to hear. You should call more often. I'm going to jump off and make some room. But keep an eye on Monterey.
How is the weather 100 miles outside of New York City at the moment?
It snowed earlier and it changed to rain. George from Michigan is absolutely right. We actually had mosquitoes a few days ago.
Strange days.
Strange things.
Days.
Okay, thanks for the call, Fred. And
you're on the air.
Hey, this is Elon from Brooklyn.
Good morning.
I wanted to give a young person's perspective on the world ending, which is...
How young are you?
I'm 21. And not to sound like a cynic or a pessimist or someone who's depressed, but I am not positive that the world ending would be a horrible thing. Because as someone who's yet to start a career or even finish school, there seems to be things happening all around me that contradict the way I wish them to go, and the way that they've been, say, from my father's generation or from generations before his. So, you know, if I'm 21 and we're coming out with things like the iPad and the iPad Mini, and corporations are buying out my favorite shops day by day, then what are things going to be like, you know, when I'm 45?
Maybe
patterns will reverse and things will go a different way, but probably not.
Maxi pads.
I have felt the same way when I was 21. Different things, of course, no internet, but other things that seemed weighty in importance at the time and maybe are or were.
Well, I mean, if the world was coming to an end, I wanted to taste all of the joys of the world before it did.
Yeah, let's go knock off some banks and get some to do it with.
So,
one person's
it didn't...
joy is another person's arrest.
I'm going to miss those Mayan onions. They're sweet like Vidalia, and they grow all year round.
But you would think you would want to keep it going just to see if to satisfy your curiosity of what it would be like.
Right,
just to see what happens. Yeah.
That's right. Maybe the alternative is what we wish the world was.
Well, you know, the world, what we wish the world would be, sometimes turns out to happen. You know, when I was a kid, there was a radio program called Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy. And I used to listen to it every day, and every once in a while they would say, if you send in a Wheaties box top and 15 cents, we'll give you something. And what they had to give me was something that everyone said, oh, it's got to be a cheat of some kind, something called a magic answer box. And my parents would never give me the money to send in for a magic answer box, the 15th. And then finally they said, oh, all right. And I sent the money and the box top into the address in Battle Creek, Michigan. And it was past the deadline, so I never got this magic answer box. And now...
did you get your 15 cents back?
Yeah.
No, I did not. But now I can, like, take an iPad and ask it anything. It's a magic answer box. The internet is a kind of a magic answer box.
Ask Kellogg's what they did with the 15 cents.
Right, well...
The answer is, wasted it on Wheaties.
The magic answer box, I understand, was something like a cube that said yes or no inside a globe. You shook it up, and it either came down as a yes or a no, and it answered every one of your questions, kind of.
And since then, we've taken a long way, baby, into... what is it? Snowballs.
Snowballs?
No.
What do they call those things? Snow globes. You know, you shake it up.
Right. Well, that's what
I was. So, well, it's if the world ends, it's snow globe. But it's 2:51, and in a few brief minutes, Ahmed Ali will be in here to lead WBAI. Down the road toward the end of the world. If the Mayans were wrong, we should have a great party next week, don't you think? Mayans were wrong days. I hope before I leave here this morning, I just want to thank a whole bunch of people who've kept me alive and kicking during this past year. Goes from doctors to good friends. Some of our friends checked out this year, and they're sorely missed. And I hope if you're listening now, you can stick around and be with us toward the end of the year. We're talking about moving the station. That might be the end of WBAI as we know it. And is that Ahmed Ali?
Yes, indeed. Hi.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. So nice to see you here.
It's nice to be seen.
Yes. We're going to clear away as soon as we can. But I was in the middle of saying thank you to some of the people who've made this be a year that's been full of a lot of great ups for me. It seems to be that my radio program, the documentary about my radio program, has been very well received every place it's gone. It's opening this week, I believe, in Houston, Texas. And if you don't get to Houston, it's not the end of the world. So why don't you just play some of that music and let us get out of here.
Okay.
Thank you very much, everyone who's helped to support WBAI and Radio Unnameable this year. And let's continue to keep free speech alive and continue to propagate the rumor that if we talk things over, we can work things out.
What a great idea. Hope to see you next week.
Bye-bye, Paul.
Hope to see you next year.
No, before sure. Next year. But
after the world, but before next year.
See you next year, too.
Yeah, that's it.
All right, and I wish you, in the meantime, a merry war on Christmas. And also, I want to say that your movie has changed Radio Unnameable into Radio Nameable.
What? Changed it into Radio Unnameable.
No, it changed Radio Unnameable into Radio Nameable.
Interesting.
Interesting.
Okay. Bye-bye, so, Paul.
All right, well, happy end of the world, you guys.
Happy Thank end you. Of the world to you,
too. Same to you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
You
Bye.
Too. Bye. Bye.
Camera's eye and answer the question, will this world survive?
Rosalie.
And they have said, we'll try. We'll try.
Strange things have happened. And never before, my baby told me I would have to go. I can't be good no more, once like I did before. I can't be good, baby, honey, because the world gone wrong. Bad this morning, ain't got no home, no use in worrying, cause the world going wrong. I can't be good no more, once like I did before. I can't be good, baby, honey, because the world to your head. If I didn't leave you, I would have to kill you dead. I can't be good no more, once like I did before. I can't be good, baby, honey, cause the world gone wrong. I tried to be loving and treat you kind, but it seemed like you never right. You got no love in mind. I can't be good no more, once like I did before. I can't be good, baby, honey, cause the world's gone wrong. You have a and she don't treat you kind. Praise the good Lord to get her out of your mind. I can't be good no more, once like I did before. I can't be good, baby, honey, because the world got said when you've been good now, can't do no more. Just tell her kindly there is a front door. I can't be good no more, once like I did before. I can't be good, baby, honey, because the world. Because I'll never be back. I can't be good no more, once like I did before. I can't be good, baby, honey, because the world gone soon behold.